Hey, everyone. It is really good to do this second conversation, and with all the ones we have in front of us as well, it's really good. The last one we had with Chad was just fascinating. It was good to get into another man's life and hear his story. And I learned a number of things from that conversation, and I still won't forget this idea of Chad talking about in so much of his life he feels like just such a young boy. And then when he started talking about what he loves, one of those things being music, the question was, how old do you feel when you're singing, when you're playing music? And his answer was, I feel ageless. And that was huge. I mean, that was a big epiphany for me, because I realized that's true in my life as well. I can feel so young until I'm doing what I'm made to do, and then I just feel ageless. Age is not an issue anymore. So it was a great conversation, and this will be a great conversation too. So today we have Jeff Andrejian on the phone, and Jeff and I just did a calling intensive with a group of guys, and we're going to take just a few minutes to talk about that and kind of debrief that together.
Hey,
and then
Gary,
we're going to go into a subject called of transition. Yes, Jeff.
Hey, Gary, before you go on, I got to say to Chad that I had a cut out in the middle of your conversation, but had gotten that question from Gary about what did you feel like when you played music, and you said timeless. Now, I love this. I could talk to Chad and he's muted. You know, I would love to do this more often. This is great. You can say anything you want to him, and he can't say anything back, right? So anyway, when I got to this party, I told everybody that story, and that just generated so much life in that group of people. So there you go, Chad. You were spreading the wealth that night. That was awesome.
Yeah, and don't forget, Chad has a few comments for you, but it's on the chat line. So he's not completely muted. So anyway, glad you're all here. And so, Jeff, why don't you just real quickly, since we're all friends here and family, why don't you bring him into what you and I did this weekend and how it went?
Well, you know, we're Expeditions of the Heart. We do all these events, and we're always on the frontier because we never duplicate one. So we had this calling intensive, but we run it at a brand-new retreat site on the Blue Ridge Mountains. First time we've ever been there, so it was all the logistics of meeting all these men and having them come in. We haven't never met them before. You know, it's the food, marrying up the video with the speakers and all that kind of stuff. So it was a lot of energy, a lot of coordination, a lot of anticipation. But what did you think of the place there, Gary?
Oh, it was spectacular. I mean, it was a perfect environment for what we were doing. It was small. It was intimate. But the vistas were epic. I mean, it was a great place. It really was.
It was. And so I know a lot of guys were asking on Basecamp, hey, how was it? How did it go? And I would just like to say from my end, we had a lot of fun. I took three guys who were in the Marines. Two are Marine Corps pilots, and one is a minister to these Marines. And so they came in, and I jumped in as the fourth to tell my story. And then we had Mark Haskins be our facilitator, who did an incredible job. But it was so much fun being around these military guys, because these are sort of search and rescue guys. I felt like I was back in the cockpit. But as it turns out, on Friday night, one of the guys just made colonel on that Monday, and he has a medical emergency on Friday, the very day of the intensive. He can't go down there with his other buddies from Maryland, and so they come down. And he secures the medical emergency, and it was a really good excuse why he couldn't make it, and then runs down there in the middle of the night. At 12 o'clock at night, he's trying to find this place on the Blue Ridge Parkway. His Marine buddies go out there and wait for him on the parkway, find him, and bring him in. So by the time he gets there, after driving all night, medical emergency, these Marines don't let him go to bed. They make him do the picture exercise that we did that night. And so, but it was just so much fun to see how these guys love one another and work with each other. It was just a joy to be with these guys, you know.
Yeah, and for the guys listening, you know, if you've been through the calling intensive, you know what it's like. You know the sometimes the nervousness of telling your story for the first time from beginning to end, and what that's like. And you could see the nervousness in some guys, and then the skepticism with the picture exercise. You know, some were already in. Some already had kind of their epiphanies or revelations to some degree, and some were like, I don't know. And then to watch that all change after either watching another man do his picture exercise or doing their own. So it's just, most of you guys know, it's really an amazing weekend.
And I got to tell you, this one story, it's feedback time, and the guy that made Colonel is just handling the other Marine. Just, this guy's a colonel. He's got this sort of eagle look to him. He's got quite a bark to him, but he's got a heart. So he had this perfect combination of a heart, but with a lot of authority. And he was just so gently working the desires of this other Marine and encouraging him in what he should do. And then as an exclamation point at the end, he goes, "And if you don't do it, I'm going to come there and kick your ass." Which I thought was great, because I was like, I always wanted to say that. I always wanted to do that to a guy, you know. And I don't think I'd be very good at it. So what I've decided to do is always travel with the colonel now. And so when I give my feedback, then I'm just going to have him stand up and go, "Hey, and if you don't do it, I'm going to kick your ass," you know.
Yeah,
just a great exclamation point, you know.
It's
he was
perfect.
Great.
Just perfect. Yeah, I saw him. So, Jeff, I will go with you that you would have a different effect saying it than he would.
Yeah, this guy was really good at that. And but you know what's amazing is I'm watching their lives, and I'm going to tell this story because it's just an emphasis on how opposed our lives are. You know, I'm I've done this facilitating how many times? 3-4 times. I'm totally wired into this intensive. And you say, okay, it's feedback time or story time. Don't compare your stories, right? Well, I'm listening to these Marines tell their stories, and, you know, they're epic. These guys are on search and rescue missions over the Pacific, and, you know, I'm listening to their story, and I'm thinking to myself, I got nothing. You know, I'm going to get up there. I got nothing. And I really had that feeling, you know. And so then I get up there and I tell my story, and then, of course, they're looking at me like, we got to make a movie out of this thing, you know. And but just as many times as I've done it, I listened to their stories and immediately was struck with, I got nothing, you know. So, I don't think we have any idea how much our stories are opposed.
Right. And again, how diminished we can feel about our own story, either because how rough the other guy's life was or how great his life is. Jeff, let's jump in. And I think talking about the one guy in your group who has just been promoted to colonel and was really wrestling that weekend with, gosh, what is that going to mean for my life? Should I stay? Should I go? Should I accept this? Who am I? You know, I don't want to be caught into something that now is forming me into something that I'm not. And he was just wrestling with that. So obviously this is transition, or at least it's looming in front of you. So, Jeff, why don't you jump in with why you and I were talking. You said, man, I'd love to do it on transition. So why don't you just jump in there?
Right. And so I'm listening, and all these guys are calling in. And as I call in, I have to sort of interview them about, are you ready for an intensive? And as they begin to open up their life and talk about where they're at, just man after man was in a major transition. And so all I was doing was I was listening to God and seeing patterns of what God was saying. So I kept on hearing transition, and so I just decided that, hey, I think we need to stop and talk about this. And so me and Ben then made the video on transition, and I would love to talk about it, not from the standpoint of view that, hey, I'm an expert or anything on transition, but that, okay, I'm willing to share my story and what I learned about being in transition. Obviously, Gary can help with us here today in talking about his transition, but if we just begin a forum and having some discussion on it. And one of the things I'll say on transition is that I think for a lot of guys, especially if you're in an institutionalized church, when you're going through a transition and there's going to be some movement and fluidity in your life, a lot of times you can go to the institution and, you know, you might go to a pastor or something like that, and they're not really tuned in to transition. They're really more about, you know, Bible instruction, you know, good things. They're going to be teaching you more about service, you know, tithing, things like that. And, you know, their objective is, hey, get you back here next week. So the idea that there would be some movement in your life and you're going someplace, a lot of times men don't know where to go or who to talk to. And so I think that that's why they go out to the specialists out there and go, okay, I need some help. And so if they're not going to get it in their local community or their local church, they're going to start getting to the bookstore somewhere in this need to know of what to do next.
Right. 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 And the other thing that strikes me, too, is we are in a time, because of what's happened with the economy, and that's not the core of it, everything's getting shook right now, that transition seems fatalistic right now, right? Because transition means the end of stability, the end of all these things. Whereas, you know, 5 years ago, it wouldn't have seemed like that. It would have been going from one thing to another. And so what I think, Jeff, as I'm hearing you, I'm thinking, I think the idea of transition just creates huge fear in men.
Yeah.
And also the avoidance of it versus, you know, I mean, and some, like you were saying, we were talking on the phone earlier, and we'll hit on that now. Some transition we can avoid, and some we can't. We have nothing
right.
to do with it.
Right.
There's the realignment of our life that we do because we're following God and hearing Him, and He's saying, you need to live according to who you are and what you are. And then there's realignments that come along that just happen to us, and we have no say-so.
Right.
You know, so,
yeah.
Yep.
Looking at both of them. And the truth of it is growth comes from change, right? Comes from light, noise, things like that. It's when we choose stability or the status quo that often we forfeit the ability to grow. So often, really, kind of what's behind the maker of this transition is often God. And we don't know that right away, and so therefore we're confused, especially if we're with a lot of people who are comfortable with the status quo, because they don't really kind of understand, you know, what's going on. And so often the person that's in transition feels as if I've done something wrong, or how come everybody else seems comfortable where they're at, but I'm not, or something like that. And I think that's what we want to speak into. And because there's so much mystery in our life, I think the first thing you have to do and take out when there's a transition is this idea of ignorance. Like, gee, I should know where I'm going at this point in my life, but I don't know where. And so when I started talking to the men calling in for the intensive, that was one of the first things I did. And to them, it was like, oh, okay, I'm liking this already. You know, there was this relief of, okay, it's all right not to know where you are right now. That does not mean that you're not in the middle. You know, all who wander are not lost here. That sort of idea.
Right, right. And, you know, I had a conversation with one of our base camp members, Pablo, today. We were Skyping from, you know, from Colorado to Tel Aviv. And it's fascinating hearing his story. Now, he's in the middle of the night there now, so he's sound asleep. But he was saying, you know, here he is, a world-class professional tennis coach. And he said, Gary, the funny thing is, he said, I've got nothing. He said, usually I have people calling me, asking me if I will coach them. And he said, I'm not getting any inquiries, any offers. I've got nothing. And he just said, I don't know what God is up to, right? And so one of the questions was, well, Pablo, have you done, as far as tennis goes, and he's not sure he wants to go back to that necessarily, but have you done everything you typically do, or have you, like, turned everything off, the inquiries, the putting yourself out there, the saying you're available? And he said, no, I've done everything, and I'm getting no response. And it was an interesting conversation because I think some guys, they get in a place where nothing's happening, and perhaps we want to blame God on that when God may be saying, well, why don't you make a call, you know? Why don't you move a little bit and something will come up? And then that's one issue. And then there's other times where you do everything you know to do, trying to stay outside of striving and manipulating, and nothing's happening. And that's when we really have to ask God, what is all this free time I have for right now, right? You wanted me to pray. You wanted me to read, research, relate, try, experiment. What rest? What is this about?
Yeah. And the truth of it is, I think when there's a, you know, we could say another word for a transition is a frontier, right? It's a new frontier. You're going somewhere new, or you're going to do something new. And, you know, with that idea, on frontier is that you now have to walk with God in a new way. You can't sort of play the notes on the page here, the prescribed way to do things. You really just don't know. So it's this idea of celestial navigation. How do you begin to walk with God in a new way? And it's a very challenging way. And yet, in some ways, I think when you hit the frontier and you don't know which way to go, I think God is actually honoring your life right now. It's actually a beautiful thing. To me, I'm more interested in a person actually that is in transition. When I hear they're in transition, my ears just stand up. I'm like, oh, you know, okay. Hey, well, let's talk about that, you know. So I love that. And the first thing you do is dispel some of the myths. I've done something wrong, or I'm an idiot, or that sort of thing. And just quiet your heart down before you begin to talk to them about, okay, hey, listen, there's probably some good indicators within you. You know, your next move and where you're to go is actually in you. You know it. It's just a matter of, okay, let's find it, and then go back and start looking at that story, obviously.
Right, right. You know, Jerry had a great comment. Oh, it was a question and a comment. He said, what about when transition takes you into the frontier? And then he said, and seemingly alone. And
yeah.
What hits me, especially about the last comment, Jerry, is the idea that we are in transition, that typically means we're leaving something. We're the one leaving. Everyone else is staying. Our world changes. Their world does not.
Right.
And until you said that, I just thought, you're right. Transition usually feels alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we'd both agree that there is a time in a transition where, like in Shawshank Redemption, where you have to crawl through the sewer pipe on your own. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you're going to get in there, and you're going to have to go through that alone. And so, again, I don't think God will bring you to that point until he's honoring your life, so to speak, with going, okay, you could do it. It's me, you, the Father, the Son, Holy Spirit, and you. There's the four of us, and we're going to get through, you know, and then he's waiting for you on the other side of that sewer pipe, you know. And I think that's the hard part, is that there are times when a person's in transition, and guess what? It's you and God. I can talk to you, or anybody can talk to you. We can give you some advice, but, you're navigating with God. And he is eventually the architect of your life. He's the one who's authoring your life. So he's the one that's bringing you through there. And he will jealously go at you, and you will be on your own at times.
Yeah. Okay, so Jeff, for the sake of those who maybe haven't watched the video and don't know much of your story, or those who are going to listen to this, you know, a month from now or 6 months from now for the first time, why don't you tell a bit of the most recent transition story, kind of what it was and what that was like for you, and what has God been doing in that?
Yeah, you know, just kind of going back a little bit, I literally grew up in an airplane flying around the world with my dad. So, you know, I was often invited up into the cockpit. For me, the first memory was sitting on my dad's lap, making pictures out of the clouds in this airplane, him taking me into Vietnam. It was adventure. It was warfare. It was exciting. I just grew up with flying and adventure in my blood. So when I grew up, right, it was no surprise that I would become an airline pilot. And even my life as a kid was, playing Army with the guys and that sort of thing. And I can remember one time, because I recovered this when Gary asked us about our story, is going into, I was playing Army, our block against the block behind us. And I went on a little rescue mission, and actually I was the younger guy in the crowd. I was probably about 8 or 9, and there was a tent back in someone's backyard. And I opened up the flap, and sure enough, there my guys were, prisoners in the tent. I remember shooting the guard. He actually died like he was supposed to, and I released the guys from this prison that they were in technically. And I could remember those guys slapping my back, and there was a feeling I had like none other, of releasing these guys from prison. I can remember that at 9 years old so distinctly. And so as God developed me in team sports and school, and then eventually to become an airline pilot, crewing airliners around the world and working with people, there was this development in my life and what he was doing. And so I naturally thought I'd be doing this all my life. And then things really began to, you know, I had some real happy years in there, but things really began to change after 2001. And there was that 9/11 incident, and the entire industry wound up tanking. And there were some markings of the fact that I was in transition really beginning then. And as that industry started to fall apart, somehow I felt it was my fault. You know, my dad flew in the airline industry. It was the golden years, and this industry was falling apart, and I felt like it was my fault. This thing's going down on my watch. And every time I went to work, it was like, you know, another guy getting furloughed. It was somebody, you know, we were getting another pay cut. You know, people were asking me what it's like flying with all these terrorists out there. And I'd say, hey, the real terrorists are up in the management. And when they get together, the only thing they do is talk about how much money they can get out of the pilots, because they're going to fix this airline on our back. They took our retirement away. And so it was a, it was really difficult. And I want to look at management and I want to blame them or something like that. But really what was going on, looking back now, was transition, was happening. Well, 2005, I medical out. I go downstairs to read the computer and half the computer is missing. I can't see it. And so long story short, I developed what they took me to the Mayo Clinic, and I've got what they called ocular migraines. And that's a line item for the FAA. You cannot fly with those. They give me a field visual test. I fail it. I'm done. I'm out of the cockpit. And I'm on break, technically, just on medical until it heals itself or stays like that. What was interesting was then I went to what I love to do is work with men. So I started working with men at my local church and running adventures with them and doing that sort of thing. But another thing happened to me. And that was that, you know, when I was raising my kids and I had these happy years, I was flying them around the world. I did that Lewis and Clark journey with them. You know, I was the great dad. You know, I was just all over these kids and showing them the world. Well, at 16, my daughter ran into a little tunnel of her own, and some drugs and alcohol got involved. We confronted her, and she ran away. Well, that was a real crisis, because we found her. We got her into a boarding school at that point in time. But I say that to say that what I was known for was to be an airline pilot, and I was this great dad. And both of them were gone. You know, I mean, I could still, you know, obviously think about, you know, it might be a good dad and that sort of thing, but it didn't seem that way. You know, there was trouble in paradise here, you know. And so it was a major disruptive transition, and it was one I did not choose. And looking back, it was one that God chose for me, because he wanted to develop and bring out some other things that were hiding behind the four stripes, the four captain bars, and this image of being a great dad. And that's where everything changed for me.
Boy, Jeff, that was a lot at one time. I mean, those were all major things, and yet they were all roughly in the same season of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about disrupting and dismantling, the work of God. That was major.
Yeah. It was quite a shock. Really what God was doing was what I started to work with men, and so these men's meetings are filling up right when my daughter runs away. And so I'm sitting there talking to my wife, and she says, hey, I said to her, I'm taken out. I can't be this guy in the church doing this. And she goes, you are not taken out. You know, she's pointing, you know, you quit, I'll kick your ass, you know, that sort of thing. And so I go back into the cave. We call it the cave where all the guys were. And I says, hey, here's what's going on. And I open up the kimono, and I start being honest with my life. Well, those guys formed a posse to track down my daughter. It was really unbelievable. These guys scoured the whole area. They broke up into groups and that sort of thing. Needless to say, what they appreciated was somebody standing up and being honest with their life. And for whatever reason, God used me at that point in time to go, hey, listen, let's start really talking about our lives. And so after I shared my life, those guys started standing up one after another and started sharing their lives, and our mouths dropped open, because we had no idea of the guy sitting next to you in church for 5, 10, 15 years. They had no idea what was going on in the other guy's life. And so this transformed everything. So it was all for a good reason, looking back on it, but very, very difficult when you're going through it, you know?
Well, and here's what I'm impressed by hearing your story again is, first of all, you have a major disruption. You leave what you love doing, and you earned your place there. You have to leave it, no choice, a medical condition. Eventually, you know, you begin this thing called the cave. You absolutely love it, and it gets taken away from you. I mean, it's kind of like you would think the first thing was enough, transition and disruption. Then another one comes in, and all these little things. I mean, it wasn't just one, but it was several.
Yeah. Yeah, it was several. So it was a trauma. And you know what's interesting, and from the flying perspective, just to give you an idea, if you're in a bad air mass, if you're in an air mass that is like trouble and you need to get out of it, then the thing that is going to happen as you transition from one air mass to another is that's where the wind shear is. So the difference in the wind is the greatest in this boundary layer from one air mass to the other. And so as you're punching out of one reality and going to wake up in a new one, that's when it gets really tough. So one of the practical things I would say to a guy going through transition is that when you know you're going there and you're stepping forward and all of a sudden you're just getting hammered on all corners, you just stay the course. Just stay the course. And then literally what happened to me was I broke out into a new reality. It was just all new game. And there were no maps anymore because eventually I started Expeditions of the Heart. And how many men's ministry groups are there out there like what I'm doing in the United States, right?
Right.
Nobody.
So,
nobody.
So, Jeff, are you saying, going back to the – because and Jerry is chatting, fascinating with this whole wind shear thing. Is the most dangerous part coming out of one mass, as you said, or let's call it transition for what we're talking about, and going into in time in between one to the other? Explain that just
yeah,
one more.
Yeah, and that's where a good captain comes in, because you'll be flying along and you're picking your way through the weather. You're in some bad stuff and you want to get out into the blue. And so you take a course, and then all of a sudden you take that course and it starts getting really rough. And you'll sit there and watch the co-pilot turn white and go like, hey, let's just make another turn out of this. That's where the captain says, hey, hold on, hold on, hold on. You can't see anything yet. Hold on. And then, boof, you're out in the blue. You break out. So it's always the roughest right as you transition from one reality to another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And often when a person's in that and they're really getting hammered is where somebody – it's really cool to have a sage come in and just say, hey, man, stay the course right now. I know this is going to be tough, but all great stories come from guys who are lost and in rough waters. You know, this is what makes a great story actually, you know. So of course, you don't tell them that then, but, you know, you say, hey, stay the course.
Right.
And so I'm going to turn this back on you, Gary, and go, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well,
right?
I do. And it was, and you and I had part of the transitions during the same time, kind of when the cave was taken from you, and then I was going through a transition from Ransom Heart into the Noble Heart. And I think we understood each other's words well, because we were experiencing the same hardships in some ways. So yeah, I mean, for me, what was hard was, what was good was God had given me a warning that something was coming, right? It was, maybe it's like
yeah.
the air traffic controllers or whoever saying you're about to fly into something. He was telling
yeah.
me that. And again, that was, you know, both a fearful thing to hear, but a comfort to know that if he's telling me this, obviously he's watching
right.
me, he's with me.
Right.
But to have everything, especially in Ransom Heart, you know, that was 7 years formally, to have everything that I knew that I had built, that we had accomplished, that we put in place in every way, organizationally, you know, relationally, in vision, and to have that fall apart for me, that was major. And
yeah,
and I'll tell you what, part of the wind shear for me was, and I didn't realize this for about 3 weeks, 3 weeks after I was gone, was the wind shear factor was this sentence, was, see, Gary, if you don't have what they need, they don't want you there. And when I say they, I'm talking about this historic sentence,
yeah.
this lie that came up in my life because of my wounds. And it kind of came up, and I thought, and it was God warning me, kind of saying, Gary, don't go there. Be very careful with this. This is not what this is. But I thought, oh, my goodness, everything points to that. Everything points to that. That is reinforced by the circumstances. And yet God was saying, no. And that was the wind shear. I mean, that's what could have put me nose down into the ground right there.
Right.
That transition, and so that was a huge vulnerability for me, as well as, you know, coming to a situation and saying, you know what, I really don't want to get close to other people again. I don't want to work with people again.
Yeah.
That's just too risky. One more time, it proved to be a bad idea. And God was kind of warning me as a father saying, Gary, don't go there. Don't go there. So, I was writing down when you were speaking, I was talking just about the huge vulnerabilities, the risks, you know, the wind shear factors and others that are present in a transition.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting is I can look back on my transition, and the cave wasn't really taken away. I just ran that for as long as we could until I realized that I can't give one message on in the cave and send these guys back into the institution for a different message. And so we left that. And I think the hard part for me was leaving our church. God was asking me to do that. No one else understood it. Everybody was very concerned, and yet I had to leave. I knew I had to go. What God was doing was he was going, there are some other men out there that I want you to meet and that I want you to work with. I can look back at it now, and I can go, oh, my gosh. Yeah. And now I can go, I would have never met these guys had I stayed working at my local church. So there are these new things and places that God is taking you. Okay, so now in this transaction for me, I wound up having an argument with the pastor who's one of my best friends, right? And so I can look at him and I can blame him for my transition and it not being able to work out at church, and I've got to go out there and get my own 501c and do this. I can blame him, but the truth is he's playing his part perfectly. He's moving me on. And it's difficult, but he's moving me on. And
okay,
so I look
now, okay, but let me ask you with that. So was he? Do you think he was moving you on intentionally with full knowledge of what you could become if you weren't there, or do you think God used circumstances and him to move you on?
No, it was he was not moving me on intentionally. That's a long story. But it was not intentional on his part. But God was able to use it in order to move me. And so I think what we want to do sometimes is we want to go, hey, if that person would have done this, I wouldn't be in this position. Or if this job would have lived up to my expectations, I wouldn't be in this transition right now doing what I'm doing. And so what we could do is we could focus on a person or a job or a wife or whatever it is that we think is the culprit in putting us in this vulnerable position of transition or frontier. But in reality, I think what's behind it all is God is using it to move us out. And again, this idea that he's validating our walk with him. If we've gotten to a point where we have no maps, I think God is looking at us and going, you're ready for this now, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Jeff, let me ask you. So you leave the airlines, you have to. How long of a period did you have after leaving when it was set? Because you got the eye examinations, you talked to the doctors, you knew now I can't go back in at this point. How long did it take you to start moving in a direction, start doing something? And I'm not talking about obviously just being busy. And how did you, what were the markers that started you in some direction?
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, I had never really met you yet, hadn't talked about desire and things like that. But when I transitioned out, I said, you know what, I'm going to do some things I've always wanted to do. So that's when we started running Adventures with Men. But that's when I took the job up at Monticello. And I honestly believe that God got that job at Monticello to orchestrate that event where he met me up there. And see this Lewis and Clark adventure? That's you, okay? I got to take you out of your job. You'd never see that. I've got to get you up here all alone, and I'm going to speak to you about what the next leg of your journey was. And so it was right there then that shortly thereafter I left Monticello, and then we started Expeditions of the Heart. And then that's when I met you. So the cool thing is that these desires are really active in a guy. They're there if you'll listen to them and do them. And so it's not something that you have to kind of work up in a guy. Most guys really want to do what they want to do. And what God was developing in me, he was then going to be able to use. So what these guys said in this last intensive, they said, you're in another cockpit right now. You're in another where you initiate men And the switches in the cockpit are freedom and life and those sorts of things, you know. So it's a different cockpit scenario that we're that I'm in right now. So does that make any sense?
It does. So okay, but let me probably the same answer. Let me just ask this in a little different way. So here you are sitting. Now this is, let's say, before Monticello. Here you are sitting with time on your hands, trying to figure out what to do. What did you ask yourself to give you some sort of bearing, some sort of trajectory, some sort of direction to look in?
Yeah. You know, when I started working with the men in my church, you know, if you've got these three great mysteries, and one of them is, you know, who is God really? Who's your Father really? Then the other mystery is, who are you really? And why are you here? If you look at those three mysteries, what I was seeing with the guys in the cave, and I, you know, obviously a deep love for these men, was they might have some concept of God, but they had no idea who they were. And I saw that. I recognized that. And I think that's the real frontier in the Christian world right now. And for me, it is men have no idea who they are. And no one validates them. Nobody affirms them, and that sort of thing. Often institutions will, you know, anyway. So without getting into that, that's what I saw, men not knowing who they were. That's when I called you.
Okay.
You know, I heard what you were doing, and I said, you know what, I need to talk to this guy. And would he help us? You know, so I started to look for help. And so I think it was based on that I knew what my mission was, and it was now men's hearts. And how do I get in there and start to work on it? So that's what I noticed, and then that's what I did. And you realize you were the first retreat we did when we became Expeditions of the Heart, was the Cauldron Retreat in West Virginia.
Huh. See, that's fascinating. I was not trying to get you to say that, to pull me in the story, but where I was going, and you answered it, was, you know, with me, when I left Ransom Heart, I left because there was something that I was very aware of and had been becoming more aware of through the years that I had to do. And I couldn't hold it back. I couldn't trim it down. I couldn't put it in reserves. I just had to do more of it versus, you know, other transitions in my life. I was wondering what I was supposed to do, and you were kind of in that place. So what I'm hearing you say is, I saw this need. I saw this going on. And when it comes to the question of who am I, that's what I wanted to go after. And you did. And before you know it, you started this thing called the cave, and it's becoming big. You know, and even when that was taken away, you still had to do this. You still kept doing it because you couldn't help it.
Yeah, yeah. And, I you know, I think, again, what's interesting is that I think God, you know, and I kind of hate to say this on the phone, but he busted you out of one atmosphere and into another where you met
right.
a lot of men you would never have met. And a lot of, I think... You know, watching you, and I'm not blowing any wind up your skirt here, right? We're buddies, but watching you in your glory gave such an ascendancy this weekend where men are alive and alert to hearing from other men and from God, and it's absolutely beautiful to see. And so I think that's what he was doing. It doesn't look like the way we always think it's going to be. We think everybody's going to be happy with our journey, and everybody's always going to agree with us, and I'm never going to get anybody mad at me. And I don't know. I don't think that game really works. I haven't really seen that, you know. But
yeah. So, okay, so let me ask you. You may be coming into another major transition because now you have been free to go back to flying again if that's what you choose to do and whatever process you have to go through with U.S. Airways. So you're about to go, you could be going back into a transition again. So with that idea, what have you learned, gained, acquired, experienced through this transition over these years that you're taking into this next possible transition, or what you would tell another man?
Okay, that's a great question, first of all. And here's the thing about the frontier is I don't think you're really comfortable, like safety-wise, on the frontier when there's a transition coming up. So, of course, I'm looking at this and going, hey, man, I don't know if I could do this, you know. You know, if you take 10 days off in the if you're in the cockpit flying all the time, you take a 10-day vacation, you come back, you get in the cockpit, and the first thing you tell the guy next to you is, hey, man, I've been gone for 10 days. Keep an eye on me. right? Just to reacclimate and orient yourself, even after 10 days. So 5 years out of the cockpit, I'm going to have to learn how to fly that again. So there's the fear aspect of it, right? So it's always involved with risk, you know? And here's the thing I feel like. I feel like if I don't pull a trigger on this thing and do that, I am never going to be able to speak to another man about risk in his life. If you don't live there and do that when it's asked of you, I'm not saying wildly or risk, you know, that you don't need to take. But for me, I felt like, okay, I need to pull the trigger on this, and I need to walk into my own fear on that. So I'm walking into that, but I'm going into it with a whole new mindset of this company, US Air, is not the end, is not my story and what happens there. I am not looking to that airline anymore to give me a happy return mint and to make sure I'm happy the rest of my life and everything is going to be okay. I'm literally just going back into the battle of what happens in the cockpit, what happens with the weather, what happens with the people, what happens with airplanes and mechanicals and all the glory of, you know, flying over the North Atlantic and three guys looking down over Greenland and just enjoying fellowship together, you know. So I'm going back into that with a whole new mindset. And I can honestly say I am not the same man I was 5 years ago. But in the back of your mind is, okay, will this take you out again? Will this kill your heart again and do that? So all that risk is there for me, but certainly with a different viewpoint on it.
Right. Well, and Jeff, you are, I mean, I can tell you, you are a different man today than you were 5 years ago. I mean, I know that, one, because I know God's working in your life, and number two, mainly because you're my friend and I've watched your life, and I was, I admired your life before. I admired it even more now because of who you are and what I've seen and what I've seen come out. And so you would be a different man in the cockpit today than you were 5 years ago, no doubt.
Well, you know, I think that's what's been fun about this relationship. You know, it's friendship and it's mission, but you know, I'm looking back and I'm going, I just love to be around guys who have taken major risks like that. You know, there's something about when you do that and you take a chance on what you love to do, even though it might not make sense or you might be misunderstood, somehow this thing produces life. And, you know, you get around that, and that's the sort of thing that's contagious.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this then. So guys that are listening right now,
okay,
somebody's in a major transition in their life.
Yeah.
How would you counsel him to navigate the transition? How would you counsel him to think, to watch, what to look for, what to do? What would you say now to that man?
Okay, I'll answer that question, but you have to answer your question too. Okay.
Okay.
All right, because that's a great question, and these guys just don't want to hear from me, so I'm more interested to hear what you have to say on that. But let me just say this: when you go to training and you're flying jets, they have what they call a green zone, a yellow zone, and a red zone. In the green zone, you have your checklist, your airplane's configured right, anything that happens mechanically, you're catching it, and everything's going along just fine. If you get in the yellow zone in an airplane, that's when there's been some sort of emergency or major disruption, and parts of the checklist are getting by you. Some things that you should catch are starting to get by you. And you have to know the difference between the yellow and green when you get into the yellow. And so, and then there's the red zone. Now, the red zone is when, like, you know, we're talking full-blown emergency and just some huge parts of the airplane's misconfigured and, you know, parts of the checklist, and you can get hurt, right, in the red zone. So I've never been in the red zone in an airplane, so I'm not going to really talk about the red zone, but I want to talk about the yellow zone for a minute because if you're in a major transition and disruption, I think what you want to try to do is you want to try to get into the green zone before you make a move. You want to sort of get out of that troubled zone and get. I remember one time I'm taking off in Washington National in the morning, and you know, I mean, we're the first departure on runway 1 in National, so we're like a 7 a.m. departure. It's raining; you can only be halfway down the runway. And when you wheel that jet around, line up on runway 1, there's something that goes off in your mind and going, it says, like, okay, this is for real. Okay, heads up, right? So 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, we fire that baby up, and we got everything going. We're streaming down the middle of this runway, and all of a sudden there's this huge crane, huge bird, you know, right in the middle of the runway, right? So, you know, he's been sitting there I don't know how long. And he turns around and looks at us and then starts to try to fly away right down the runway. So he's got this like 7-foot wingspan or something like that. And I'm flying with this guy, Buck. And I said, Buck. And he looks up and I said, Duck. And we went by this thing and it flew. And the second it went by us, we look up at the engine instruments like, did we just take this thing through the engine? Because if we took it through the engine 3/4 of the way down that runway, it's only a mile, 5,500 feet down runway one. We're in a deep trouble, right? So we take off, gear up, flaps up. We got to turn up the Potomac River, and we got to, you know, make sure that we got all the noise abatement procedures and all that. And he's got to call back to the tower and tell him, hey, drag that runway. We might have hit a bird. And I look out there, and there's weather, huge weather. And I need 30 degrees to the left right now. So I'm looking at Buck, and I said, hey, Buck, I said, 30 left right now. You got to go over to air traffic. And Buck looks at me. He's a little older than me. He goes, Jeff, I don't mind telling you, dude, I'm in the yellow right now. And I just broke up laughing. I said, Buck, if I get up before 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm in the yellow, you know, so and that sort of thing. But we were joking around. But the point is, what you want to do is you want to get out of the yellow and try to get back into the green. And the key to do that is to actually, when you're a professional, is to slow things down. You need to slow things down, and you need to get back into what Pablo talks about, the zone. You need to find yourself. Okay, the transition's happened, and you need to get centered and find your true north with God. When you slow things down, is then when you bring in some good counsel and you start and then you have to start going through those exercises like you did with intensive. Hey, let's look at your story of what God has been developing. Let's look at your desires. Let's look at your journey and where you're going. Okay, so that's a major thing. Now, sometimes a guy might be in the red, and literally you got to get the defibrillators out and just restart his heart. You got to get him oxygen. And sometimes a guy just needs to get up in the morning, make his bed. He's so depressed. Get, you know, showered, get out, get some exercise, get in front of the Word. I'd have him spending a lot of time in front of the Bible. And you need to just get your health back sometimes before you can even start to think about, you know, working on your calling and where you go next. So that's my answer to that question. And if you don't have any questions on that, I'll turn that question back. Okay, what does a man do when he's in transition on a practical level?
Yeah, that's a great answer. And, what dawns on me is I'm hearing your story, I think about mine, and I think about the men I know. You know, as you would say, Jeff, there's no pat answer because every man's story is different, but there probably is some common wisdom as you were giving. And I think one is the thing that you said about there is a time that we just need to disengage for a moment, you know, from the trying to make the next thing happen, from the fear, from the networking. I mean, even if that's just a day, at some point, we have to. I mean, it's your advice to me when you were telling me the flying 757 story and, the computers having to reboot and get rid of the errors from the last trip and download the new navigational maps. I just think that's absolutely. A man has to do that at some point because in transition there's way too much going on. There's the fear. There's the doubt. And I don't know about anybody else. I just don't listen well. I can't hear well or be aware of my heart well and that kind of thing. The other thing is, you know, when I talk to guys and they say, gosh, I need to talk to you. I need to figure out my calling. Well, first of all, if it's said like that, I have a feeling they've just lost their job. You know, either they've been fired or the company's gone down or something. And I'll ask them, so how long financially do you have before you start losing things? And if they tell me, you know, I'm probably good for 6 months, I'm good for a year, I'll talk. But if they tell me I've got 2 months and I lose my home, I won't talk to them because there's no way they can hear me. They're in the red at this point. They're in crisis mode, right?
Right.
And so they can't hear God. They can't hear me. They definitely can't hear their heart. And usually I'll say, just go get something. Everything in life, nothing in life is permanent except for our walk with God, you know. And so you don't worry about getting in a job that you're going to do the rest of your life because it's not going to happen. And so you get into something. It could be, you know, hey, I could at 55, I can sell pizzas for a while, and I don't care what somebody thinks about that if that's the way I'm going to survive for a little bit with my family.
Hmm.
As soon as I say, go get something so you've got something coming in, and then we can start talking.
Hmm.
Because, again, yeah. there's nothing permanent, but that's what holds
right.
everybody back.
Right.
The other thing right. I would say to them is ask yourself what – because obviously if God is in this, which I believe he is, even though man may have created it, God is still in it. You know, it's partly Joseph's thing, right? What you meant for evil, God meant for good. Or
right. right.
Paul's thing, what, you know, all things work together for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. So I would say in this time then, when God's shutting some things down that are pulling on you, you really need to try to answer the question, go back into your heart and ask yourself, what has God shown me about who I am? You've got to know that. And I was yeah. writing down some notes as you were speaking, and I thought, I think transition is a time of remembering. It should be. I think mm-hmm. transition is a time of coming to grips with whatever that is. I think transition is realignment.
Yeah.
And the last thing I wrote down is I think transition is, and I think about this phrase in Lord of the Rings, where Aragorn says to the ranger guy, I forgot his name.
Anyway, that guy.
He says, let go of the ranger and become who you were born to be. And that so struck me last time I heard it because I thought, the ranger was a good man. That was a very substantial, significant role. He wasn't leaving being,
right.
you know, the drunkard,
right.
the disruptor.
Yeah.
But he was saying, as good as that's been, that season's over now, and now you need to become more who you were born to be. I think
right.
that's what transition's about.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's good. And, you know, it's interesting because as I look back on my transition, I would tell men this. I would say, listen, I don't care if you're in the red, yellow, or green. You're in God. It's
yeah.
all in God. You haven't left his will. So he is the one, again, as the architect of your life. And my testimony is honestly, God was more interested in my calling than I was. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how he was going to develop me. I would have never chosen to leave U.S. Airways. I mean, it literally had to be a medical thing to take me out of that. And so when I look back, I can honestly look back and go, he's the one that's been orchestrating these things for his glory and how I can then cooperate with him in this. And so I'm actually been more impressed with God on the transition and having met him in a new and a fresh way than I did before that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really good. That's
yeah.
really good. Okay,
yeah.
So Chad wanted me to ask you this question. I think it's a great question. And it was this. What if someone has taken huge risks? They really stepped out, right? They went for frontier. We can walk off the map here. But he says, and now you totally doubt your ability to hear God.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how would you answer that, Gary?
I knew you were going to do that.
I'm going to bring you back
yeah.
to you, bro. Go
yeah.
ahead and answer
Thanks.
Chad's question
Thanks,
there.
Chad. Well,
yeah.
Chad, here's what I'm assuming. I'm assuming when you say that, what you mean is they've taken these risks, and now they feel like maybe I didn't hear God in those things, and I got myself into this mess. If that's what you're asking, which would make sense to me, I would – and you were saying, yes, that's what you meant. I guess here's what I would say to your friend, Chad, to your friend. I would say there's two things. One, it really doesn't matter how you got to where you are. Now, I'm not saying don't look at it, but I'm saying, one, okay, regardless, God will speak and we can hear. So it's kind of that question that I brought up before that this pastor said. The question is, do you live in the if only or do you live in the but now? And we can go back and say, if only I hadn't done that. If only I didn't leave my job. If only I didn't become a partner with this guy. If only I, whatever it is, you know, didn't move. But the real issue is but now. And I think that's, we go to God with the, okay, but now, what do you want me to do now? Now, let me say the other side of this is, I think as we try to walk with God, I think he will lead us because he knows we're trying. And, you know, it's, and so he will speak even if we took some major wrong turns, but it goes back to the, you know, that favorite story of mine when I got that GPS unit and I missed the turn and I almost felt in my heart that somebody should be yelling at me right now. And all the, and the only thing I heard from the GPS was that lady say to me, recalculating. And I think God does that. I think we go out, we take risks, and he probably has his hand on our back going, that a boy. And we do some stupid things, we take some wrong turns, and I think he just simply says, you know what, Gary? Recalculating. Mm-hmm. Just listen to me, and I'll get you back on the map again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'd say, Jeff. What's your thought?
It's interesting because I think that even if you went out and on something that you sort of preempted and you're going to do this on your own and that sort of thing, I honestly think God looks at that and goes, you know, I love this guy. Look at this. Now, he's not going to make it right now, but I love the fact that he's taking this risk, you know. And so that's my view on the Father's heart towards somebody who may be going out ahead of God or maybe has taken a wrong turn. But one of the things I can tell you for sure is that he's going to use the risk that you took and what you learned from taking that risk, and he's going to use that to develop you. And it's going to be that much easier for him to move you the next time. So I don't really think there's any wrong turns. I like that idea of recalibrating, you know, in the sense of, okay, it's not that way, but recalibrating, I love that. And I can honestly look back, and if we had time to tell you of things I've done that just turned out to be a total disaster in the moment. And yet now when I look back on it 20 years later or 10 years later, I go, oh, my gosh, look at what God developed in me while I was there. And so I don't think anything's really kind of wasted on God. And I think
right.
He absolutely loves a guy who will take risks because that's just his nature. God is a God of transitions, you know. So he loves that stuff. That's to be amended.
Yeah, and let me throw out one other thing to the question back there about how would you advise a man. The other thing that I would say from my experience is that we have got to have the counsel of other people. I mean, Jeff, you were huge in my life back in this transition time when I was very vulnerable. I mean, I knew what I wanted to go after, but I think in my heart I was very vulnerable. And there were times when you know, I had descended and I was only 5 feet off the ground and you guys would, you know, pull the stick back and I started going up again and then I start going down. And the heart counsel that you gave me, the fellowship, the encouragement, the perspective was huge because I honestly could have driven this heart of my life into the ground a number of times easily during those. So I would say to have men around you to counsel, advise, perspective, you know, just sit with you. That's absolutely necessary, I think.
Without a doubt. And as you saw on the mountain this weekend, look at my friends. I cannot believe the friends I have. I am way better. Like, my friends are way better than me. You know, collectively, the guys that I have around me are unbelievable. They are just such an instrument in what's happened in my, there's no way I could have done this on my own. Without these guys around me. So as I talk about transition, and if I've left them out in any way, it was a huge part of where I was going and what I was doing. I mean, it was Barb who came through here and the first time and said, hey, Jeff, you know what? I'm looking at what's going on here, and I think you ought to start your own thing. I had never thought about that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there starts
mm-hmm.
the seed right there, and then off and running. And, of course, these guys are just incredible around me.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that Jerry said on here, and Jerry, you have so many great, concise kind of pearls of wisdom. You're amazing, man. I love he has this phrase out here, and he says, journal the pain and the process. And I think that's huge because, you know, it's like that one guy sent me a quote where I think it was Lauren Sani that said, you know, writing causes us to detangle our thoughts through our fingers. And I think journaling makes us do that. It's journaling the pain in the process. And the other thing that dawns on me was this Paul Stanley who mentored me. you know, he would say to me, Gary, he said, transition is like driving into a huge tunnel. He said, when you first drive in, all the light is behind you. And the greatest temptation is to keep looking back because that's the only light you have. You've got nothing but darkness in front of you.
Wow.
But if you will stay the course, as you've been saying, and the guys have been writing on the chat line, if you will stay the course, eventually the light will be in front of you and not behind you. And I'll tell you what, that's been huge in my life, you know.
Oh, that's good. Okay, there you go. There's a little pearl that we've uncovered on transition right there, right? That is beautiful. Wow.
Yeah. So, hey guys, we are at an hour, actually a few minutes after, so we should be winding this up. Do you have anything you want to ask? In fact, okay, first let me do this. Jeff, is there anything else that you wanted to say? Go ahead and throw that in now, and then in a second, I may just give it five minutes of unmuted phone call and just see what happens. But is there anything else that you wanted to bring up?
Yeah. Well, I'm reading the Seth Godin book, right? And it's Seth Godin's like, you know, there's a genius in everybody. And I'm like, all right, come on. There's no, you know, where's the genius? Okay, so we have this weekend, right? Well, a couple guys coming up the mountain have instruments, and they're pretty good at them, right? So I have the wherewithal and wisdom to go, hey, listen, why don't you guys bring your instruments up there, right? So when we're on the mountain, then you tell these guys, hey, listen, we're going to gather around the fire, and would you play your guitar for us while we do that? And so we circle up, and what Tim's playing his guitar, it's unbelievable. I'm sitting back here thinking, we charged these guys $450 to come and entertain us. Now, that is genius, you know? I mean, right? How much more genius could you get from that, right?
Yeah,
and I'm thinking, man, and then they thank us. Then they thank us for it, right? I couldn't believe that, man. That was a sweet time, wasn't it, when those guys were playing for us?
Oh, and you know, it was. And you know what was also good is we had just talked about living like an artist. And these guys put their artistry out there in front of the men. And you knew, I mean, I knew that the artistry, the different types of artistry in every man was being aroused and coming up like, oh, I want to do what God has given me to do. That was an amazing time. You know?
I loved it, man. I know. So anyway, I had to put an exclamation point on that. That was absolutely beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so go ahead. You want to unmute it? Let's do that.
Okay, guys, I am going to hit unmute now, and let's see here. Okay, so everybody is unmuted. So if there is something you'd like to say or comment, just jump on in, and then we'll wind this down in a few minutes. See,
somebody
I'm going to be silent. Go ahead. Somebody's got to say something. Jerry, I think that was your laughter, wasn't it?
It just strikes me that, you know, we're texting back and forth and back and forth during the conversation. And then Gary unmutes and it all goes to silent.
That really is funny. That's true.
You know, one thing I'd say just about Jeff, you know, I've spent some time with Jeff and had email conversations with him, phone conversations with him and stuff. And, you know, you just got a character and a depth of relationship with God that's just really compelling, brother. And you know, if you know, you're shooting from the hip is sometimes better than some of the, you know, best conversation I've heard anywhere. And I just really love you, and I appreciate you. Thanks a lot for tonight.
Yeah, and I quickly right back at you on that stuff, Jerry. Man, we have got to go to Boss together, Longfellow's house, by the way. You know, I saw that on there, and I'm like, yes, sir, anytime at all. And but you know what? I saw that quote on. You know, I think the noble heart is for men who are in transition. And so going back to that idea that, the, you know, the institution really doesn't do a good job. That's not kind of their specialty. So a guy going outside of that is looking for help on that. And so, you know, again, it's shooting from the hip. I kind of like that idea in the sense of, okay, we're real guys who have come through some real transitions. So my story is just my story. My idea is that just the men listening that were muted have just as important transition stories in their lives as we do. So it's just us talking about it right now. That's just the forum that we decided on. you know, what if we put something together to really be able to give some men who are going through some transitions some practical advice? Because those guys sometimes are looking for a life raft, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and Jeff, you had talked about after we were done with this conversation, probably starting tomorrow, you wanted to maybe put up one or several questions about transition on the forum where we could talk about that, whether it's something like, who is in transition right now, defined as this, or whatever, and actually, yeah, keep this conversation going, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I was so surprised at how many men came to this retreat who were in transition. So it's not like I kind of generated this idea. I was just listening to God. And I'm not coming from an expert, more like Jerry saying, shooting from the hip, but hey, you know what? As men, let's talk about this. It's huge.
Please jump in. Yes, go ahead.
One comment I have, and it's sort of an anomaly here within this conversation, but you referred to it three or four times, and I know that there's some depth of experience there. You know, it's such a sensitive, touchy, you know, almost wounded thing that many of us have experienced within the institutional church and within pastoral staffs and, you know, elders groups and stuff that are still within that situation. I'd like to, you know, as sensitive as it is, I would like sometime for you all to talk about that. You know, what does that mean, and how do, you know, a transition. You've talked about transitioning out of the institutional church into, you know, the frontier that God has led you into. The sensitivity of it all.
You know, I look back at my years and getting into good Bible studies, and I love the training. And really a lot of it was sort of learning the notes on the page and learning a little bit about God in the process. And that sort of thing. But, you know, this wild godness is not going to let us walk that way forever. And so eventually he's going to kick you out of the nest here, and it's going to go, okay, you're going to walk with me now. And so there's nobody else to look at but him in these transitions. And, you know, the institution is, you know, by its nature going after conformity. And so, you know, their main job is, hey, get you, come back next week. Make sure you're back here next week. So it's, by its nature, an institution isn't really going to be able to, you know, give you or a man some good advice on, hey, what tributary do you take next year on your journey? Then that's not to say that God does not work in the institution, because that's just not true. I've had some great years there and have some good friends there and that sort of thing. And yet eventually God is going, you know, I'm not going to let you stay in this comfort zone here. We've got some places, things to see and do that you need to go do. And, you know, when I see a guy in that situation, again, you know, the guys who are in transition are actually the guys I love to talk to, the guys that had no idea where to go next. I'm drawn to them, you know. So it's that, you know. It has to be something along the lines of my calling.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the good part is, Jerry, is that this is, you know, this is a closed community right here, right? So
right.
We can be honest, transparent. We don't have to worry about political correctness, because it is just us. That's why I didn't want this to be an open, you know, social site. That just would not be helpful, and they're out there anyway. But I'll tell you what, we probably should shut this down, this particular conversation, and let me throw out to you guys, this has been great. And I, already, Jeff, I don't know if you're seeing it on here, but the question came up, how many of us are in transition, and guys are going, me too, I have been multiple transitions, you know, and so what I want to throw out is this idea. I think Basecamp has this huge potential, but we have got to jump in this together like this, these kind of conversations,
yeah.
These comments, forums, can I tell you what I'm seeing here, you know.
And not afraid as men to shoot from the hip. Okay, hey, just here's what's going on. I'm not sure if I can actually explain this, but here's what's going on in my life, you know. And, you know, that's the beauty of that is just precious, you know.
Yep. And so here's what I'm hoping to do, you guys, especially you. I can see you're still on the phone. You're not saying anything, and that's okay. But here's what I'm probably going to do. I want to get each one of you on one of these conversations. as this year goes on. Everyone's got a story. Everyone's got a point that we probably want to zero in on. And so whether you're talking now, you're going to talk sometime. It's going to be mostly you. So just because there's so much power in us being together like this. So anyway, any last comment before I shut this down? Okay. Part of it is I know the deal that you're afraid to all jump in at one time and we can't figure out who's talking and all that. So,
yeah.
Jeff, thank you. A last thought,
thank
Jeff,
you, Gary.
Before I do this?
Other than just thank you. I mean, what a great mission this weekend and working together like that, man. We're exhausted, but it's a great exhaustion, you know. Just a lot of clarity and light and ascendancy brought to their stories, these guys. So just a pleasure working with you. And my last comment is, hey, guys, do a mission like that with Gary. It is just so much fun, you know. It's like having a Brent Curtis come in and work with you, you know. So do that, you know. Do a mission with Gary. You'll love it.
Yeah, it was great. And we're definitely building a special ops force here. We do these things together, and we're all going to do these things together. So, guys, thank you so much. This has been really, really good. This has been rich. And I'm going to try to get this I'll probably have this up on the Campsite Conversation site is recording here probably in about 15 minutes. So, and I'll let you know about the next one. All right. All right, guys. Jeff, thank you again.